So this evening I was asked, for this evening as I was asked to talk about pain, physical pain, how to work with that in meditation, mindfulness. And the context for the invitation is that twice now a couple of Sangha members, Terry Lesser and Beatrice, have put on afternoon workshops, Sunday afternoon workshops on yoga, meditation for arthritis. And when they were planning for the second one, they thought it would be nice if it was done in conjunction with a little after that Sunday workshop, that I would give a talk on pain with the idea that it would be kind of a continuation or supportive of those people who had arthritis who would come for the workshop. So that's, and today's the day, talk about pain. And I feel a little bit shy to talk about pain in that context, however, someone who has chronic pain, because it's a very challenging and difficult situation to be under. And I've had a lot of experience working with pain in meditation. I've had some experience working with strong pain in my life and here and there, but it's never been chronic. It's gone away usually after some time. Sometimes it's lasted a few weeks. But what I have most experience with is in meditation and using the principles of mindfulness and meditation for working with pain. When I came back, after I had studied Zen for a number of years, I remember going off to Asia to practice intensively Vipassana practice there. And then I came back to the San Francisco Zen Center, and I was having lunch with some of the teachers there, and I remember talking to one of the teachers about what a wonderful support pain is for meditation practice, and how I'd learned that when I was in Asia, and how it helped so much to develop concentration and stillness, and that I learned so much. I found it so incredibly valuable to have pain as an aid, as a support for my deepening meditation practice. I've heard it said, it hasn't exactly been my observation, but I've heard other teachers say that some of the people who get the most benefit from mindfulness meditation, some of the people who make the most progress in a sense, are sometimes people who have chronic pain for whom there is no other help. They can't find anything else to help them. And given that strong motivation they have to find something that will provide relief or help, they come with tremendous motivation then to practice mindfulness or meditation. And because of that strong motivation and really looking for something really specific to help them with a specific kind of suffering, they can bring some great benefit. Now, one of the questions probably some of you have is, why would you, in the world would anybody bother to sit and meditate on pain? If it's just pain that arises in meditation, you could just end the meditation, stretch out, take a nap, take a shower, or maybe just take pain medication if you need an aspirin or stronger medication if need be. And one of the things I hope that I'll convey in the course of this evening is the benefits that can come from hanging in there with pain, making it a meditation subject, and focusing on it. But in talking about this, I think it's very important to distinguish between the objective cause of pain and the subjective experience of pain. So, for example, if there's a cause for your pain, usually generally there is, I think, then say that you have a really big thorn, a rusty nail stuck in your heel, and every time you walk, it hurts because the nail gets bored further into your heel, and it would be pretty stupid just to practice mindfulness of it. I'm very mindful of this, pain and where I feel it. And there is an objective cause, and you want to pull that thing out. And there are times when, you know, we want to bring all our common sense and our wisdom and our strong motivation to really address the cause of pain, if there's a really clear objective cause that we can do something about. In contrast to the objective kind of cause of pain, there is a subjective experience of pain. And the domain, the primary domain of meditation is the subjective experience of pain. And it's very important to say that, because what you'll hear me and often other Vipassana teachers say, is they'll say, what we're trying to do is to open to the pain, to accept the pain, to bring full presence to the pain, loving kindness to the pain, all kinds of kind of attitude towards the pain that's is a very different attitude than let's get rid of it. And that approach, meditative approach of accepting the pain, has to be understood that what we're accepting is a subjective experience. We're not necessarily accepting the objective cause for the pain. And that principle, I think, is very important in meditation in general, is to make that distinction. What we're trying to do is to find a way for the mind or the heart not to contract from whatever subjective experience it's having. And then from that, perhaps, you know, some have some wise approach to objective causes of things. The objective cause doesn't have to be the reason for the mind to contract. Around pain, the mind contracts around the, usually, generally, the physical contraction will happen around the physical pain, the subjective experience. Does that distinction make sense? Do I have to labor this anymore? Does that make sense to me, see that difference? So what we're doing is learning how to work then with a subjective experience with it. So if you have no other choice but to face your pain because there's no pain medication that can help or no other cure for it, then meditation can be a very powerful helper in helping you to kind of learn how to be with it in a wise way. Meditation, the approach of meditation, of bringing mindfulness to pain and learning how to do that, is a very helpful skill to have in our lives. Because the general strategy a lot of people have around discomfort, pain, suffering, one of the ones they have is to ignore it or deny it or escape from it. And there are ways which that's very unhealthy. There are times it can be kind of a deadening. It can deaden our aliveness, deaden our feelings, our thinking capacity. All kinds of things can be deadened when we kind of shut down against some kind of pain, that we have some kind of issue we don't want to look at. Another approach is to fight it, to have aversion to it, to attack it. And that can be counterproductive also. If we're kind of dealing with objective cause, then having a very strong, assertive perhaps, attitude to try to deal with that cause sometimes is very appropriate. But if we're looking at it as the subjective feeling of pain, to be aggressive, attacking, fighting against the subjective experience you're having, if that's what you're doing, then at the same time, you'll be fighting yourself. You're having resistance then, or you're fighting some aspect of your own experience of who you are. Who you are in that moment is you have the subjective. Subjective means it's within you. And what we don't want to have in a meditative life is a conflict within ourselves towards ourselves. And part of what the art of meditation is to learn how to be present for a subjective experience, a part of our psychophysical experience, and not to shut down around it or not to fight against it. So one strategy is to ignore, escape. Another is to fight an experience. And the third is to be mindful of it, to watch it, to be present for it. So it certainly helps us prevent us from these unhealthy approaches, which can be deadening or add greater suffering to our life. Pain can also be a very concentrating experience because it can be very compelling, and your attention can be kept very tightly on the pain, very closely on the pain. And the stronger the pain, the more compelling it can be. Also, physical pain is a wonderful place to learn about oneself. So many of the common reactions, common approaches we react to life and discomfort and problems in our life, will often play themselves out in our relationship to pain. And if it's safe to experience that pain, or if you have no choice but to experience it, then you start seeing all this whole world of reactions that you have. And you'll develop a tremendous amount of familiarity to your own reactivity, your own tendency to be reactive. And that familiarity will translate into greater familiarity outside of meditation to know how wisely to respond to different situations. You see when you react in certain ways. In looking at pain, it might be useful to distinguish between three different aspects of pain. And there's the sensate aspect of it, the sensation of it, the direct, immediate physical feeling of pain. There's the what is called the affective experience of pain, which is how we feel about it. The feeling, very loose terms, how we feel about the pain being there. And then there's the cognitive aspect of the pain, which could be loosely said, how we think about it, how we understand it. And all three of these are very important in understanding our pain, looking at pain. And they interact and affect each other. Understanding of pain, the cognitive kind of understanding of it, the beliefs we have around the pain, can have a big bearing on how we experience that pain. I think many times we think of pain as something just given. That pain is just pain, and the strength of the pain is I feel pain as strongly as I do because it is that strong. It is that painful, physically. But there's an interplay, very strong interplay between the mind and our beliefs and understandings and our attitudes with the pain itself. And it can be stronger or weaker depending on our feelings about it and our thoughts about it, our beliefs around it. So this has been commented on plenty of times that people, for example, soldiers in war, will have horrendous injuries. And they won't be bothered so much by the pain compared to someone in lay life who has the same kind of injury. And when I've read these kinds of studies, the explanation that's usually given is that the context of a soldier is that they're kind of expecting to get hurt, and they're so grateful to be alive that they'll, it's just like, some pain is, pretty small issue compared to the fact that they're still alive. They made it through out of the battle. And in lay life, we have some big injury. It comes out of the blue. And maybe we're not so much grateful for being alive, perhaps, as we are. We're still very frightened about what this means to have all this injury and how is it going to affect us. So we might have all kinds of beliefs about what the pain means. And our society helps us to have beliefs about pain. Some attitudes about pain is that pain shouldn't be there. One attitude that some people have is it's a personal failing to have physical pain. As we get older, a lot of people's bodies get more and more pain. I seem to have noticed in my body. And I expect that it'll just continue this way. I'll do best I can to exercise and do other things that'll help. But pain just comes with the territory, apparently. Right? And it's not a personal failing, is it? So what's the belief we have around pain? What's the attitude we have around pain being there? Do we have a sense of the purpose of pain? And one of the changes that can happen in relationship to pain that can be very helpful is we have an understanding of how to practice with pain, where the pain no longer is simply a problem, but can also become a benefit, also become something which we see, it has a benefit in my life. I can use it for my benefit. It's not saying that you shouldn't get rid of the pain or try to work on it, but if you understand, pain also can have a benefit when it's there. And in Buddhism, the benefit of working with pain is usually defined as its purifying possibility. To focus on pain, to pay attention to pain, can be tremendously purifying. Because what we're trying to purify in Buddhism is any kind of contraction, any kind of clinging, any kind of resistance we have to any experience we're having at all, subjective experience we're having in our life. And so if you learn that, oh, here comes pain, there has some value here because this is my chance to try to find that equanimity, to find that peaceful place where I've purified myself of all the reactivity that might arise. So the context of how we understand the pain has changed from just being a hindrance and problem in our life to having at least some benefit in terms of, you know, what it can do for our inner life, our meditation, our practice. So one of the aspects of this, then, of mindfulness, is to look at our belief set, our understanding of what pain is and how we relate to it, what our beliefs around it. The second thing we do in mindfulness is to look at our feelings around pain, which are as our reactions to it, much more on kind of feeling level. Is there aversion to it? Is there fear around it? Is resistance around it? What's the reaction, direct reaction we have towards it? And to explore that. Now, it can be very helpful sometimes, because sometimes physical pain is augmented or strengthened by the way in which we react to it. If we feel, I had you know, tremendous pain in my knees meditating, and I've seen very clearly that my aversion to it gets my knees, my muscles around the knees to contract. And as they contract, I have greater pain. And so to look very carefully and very honestly at the reactions that we have towards the pain is one way of helping us not feel as much pain, because we don't have to augment the pain with the suffering and the tightening that can happen when we have unhealthy relationships to it. Some people might assume that aversion and fear and those contractions like that are automatic and natural, and they should be there. And maybe they're automatic relatively, but they don't have to be there. There is another way of living a life besides always, you know, reacting in these kinds of ways. It can be very helpful to have an equanimous attitude, relationship to pain. And amazingly enough, I think it's amazing, but I had this experience. It's possible to be filled with rapture, filled with joy, while you're experiencing physical pain, while you're kind of focusing on your pain, even when it's going to be very, very intense pain. Physical pain does not preclude the possibility of feeling at peace, does not preclude the possibility of actually feeling joy and happiness. So we should be very careful about any automatic associations we have that physical pain means I have to then suffer psychologically. That's not necessarily so. One of the experiences I had of a lot of pain in meditation was one of the first places of great insight around pain for me was they have this ritual in Zen monasteries called Tongaryo, which when you want to go, it's kind of like it kind of looks like a hazing. I think in the best descriptions I've heard about it, it's Zen monasteries are supposed to be really tough places, and they only want people who are there who are really serious about their practice, really strongly motivated. So when you first show up, you have to show them that you're really motivated, that you have the motivation it takes to survive in a Zen monastery. So they put you in a room, and they sit down and face the wall. And when I did this in America and in Japan. In Japan, it was tougher, because in Japan, you're supposed to sit full lotus. And they'd come along with these sticks, these flat sticks, and wear these robes. And if you're sitting up in full lotus, then my knees aren't what they used to be. But if you sit in full lotus like this, then if you bring a stick underneath the person's butt next to the cushion here, the stick will go right away, all the way through. And if you're not, if you're cheating under your robes and have one of your feet down, then that stick, a kyosako, hits your heel and you've been caught red-handed. So you're supposed to sit in this room for anywhere from, depends on where you are. In one place I sat, it was 5 to 10 days. And in Japan, it was 7 to 14 days. And And you have to sit there for 3 to 4 hours at a time without moving. And then they come and serve you. Then you have your meals, and you're given half an hour break after the meals to do things, whatever you need to do. And then you have to come back and sit. And you do that all day, from 4 o'clock in the morning to 9:30 at night. And it was really painful. And the first time I went through this, the only way I could manage with the pain was I had to, because I wasn't going to leave. I was motivated, or afraid of leaving. Anyway, I wasn't going to leave. I was going to stay there with that. So it means I had to stay, and so the pain wasn't going to go away. So I had to somehow, and the pain got more and more burning, more and more intense. So I had to somehow manage with that pain. And the only way I managed with the pain was to stay with the pain moment by moment. Not just the pain, but stay moment by moment with my thoughts and reactions to that pain. And if I let my mind slip and not be mindful for a little while, it would start hurting terribly. Because I start filled with thoughts of self-pity and all these kinds of things and aversion, how terrible it is or whatever. But if I could watch my thoughts so carefully that I could catch the first little thoughts of aversion, resistance, impatience, all the kind of things and fear that might arise, catch it at the first moment it arose, and then let go of it, then the pain wasn't that bad. Then it was manageable for that moment. And, you know, what I did was string together a whole series of moments for a week. And so I got to ride it. You know, I got to ride this very, very carefully. And so it's kind of like enforced mindfulness because the cost of not being mindful was so great that I stayed present. So at the end of this 7 days, the thing is you don't know when it ends. You know, it's like it's 7 to 14 days, five. Depending where you were, 5 to 10 days. So you don't know, you know, and it's a discretion of the of one of the senior priests, monks, to decide when it ends. So you don't know. So you're just sitting there. You know, it'd be great if you can kind of anticipate the end, right? I'll just hang in there for another couple of hours, or just one more day, and it'll be all be over. But you know, and then you're sitting there, and they come and they tap someone else on the shoulder. They say, it's over for you now, and they get up and leave. Because you usually do it together with other people. So he gets to leave. But then finally, the first time I did this, I remember that little tap came on my shoulder, and I knew it was over. And I teared up, started crying a little bit. And the reason I cried a little bit, teared up, because I felt it was going to be a tremendous loss. Because until that point in my life, I had never had that much constant intimacy with myself as I had those 7 days. I had to be right there with every thought, every reaction, I learned so much about myself in the process. It was so purifying. I felt so connected to myself because I couldn't afford not to be connected. And so it was so precious. And I thought, oh, I'm going to lose this now. And so since then, I've learned you can have as much intimacy without pain. So I'm not recommending that you go out and... I went to one of my Zen teachers early on and said, I've noticed that I get much more concentrated in my Zazen practice if I sit in full lotus and have a lot of pain. And what should I do? Should I sit there with the pain, you know? And he said, don't do anything to cause yourself to have pain when you sit down to meditate. I mean, don't sit in full lotus in order to have pain so you can get concentrated. But when pain visits you, when pain comes, then include it as part of your practice. But don't go looking for trouble. So part of what we're mindful of is the belief set, the cognitive relationship we have to the pain, and also maybe the sense of purpose we have around it. And maybe there, you can find a sense of purpose that it is useful to be with the pain. Another thing we look at is our reactions to the pain, the reactivity, the fear, the aversion, the resistance that might be there. And then to look at that very honestly and very directly. Feel carefully in your body where those feelings are, where those reactions are, where the contractions might be. And really be there very carefully with it. See it clearly for what it is. The third thing is the sensations itself of pain. The direct raw sensations, independent in the sense of our reactions and our thoughts. And the physical pain, the sensations, what I found over and over again is that when I look at the pain directly, the sensations of pain directly, it ends up being experienced differently than if I look at it from a distance. Kind of look at it from the side of my eyes, or kind of have some, you know, through my thoughts and my ideas about what it is, or my concepts. But if I really feel it, it becomes very different. And one of the ways this can be described is that from a distance, pain will often look, unless it's throbbing, will often look like somewhat solid, like a solid mass of pain, of hardness. When you look at it very, very carefully, bringing the attention very intimately to the pain stops looking so solid. It becomes more of a flow, more of an impermanent, changing flux of sensations. And once it becomes a changing flux of sensations, and it's not so solid, it often helps loosen up attitudes we might have based on it being solid and fixed. Often it doesn't feel so intense, it's not so bad, when we get really close to it and feel it changing and moving. And part of it is to really get in there close. And what you'll find, the closer you get, the more you'll find that actually pain isn't in one spot. And it's not constant. It might be, you know, within 1 square inch or 1 square centimeter, but within that little spot, it's moving around. It's sparking. It's arising and passing. It's kind of very subtly moving. And so to bring you in there and feel the flickering of it, or feel the movement of it, and you get closer and closer, and at some point when your concentration gets really intimate, really tight on the pain, it can just feel like vibration, very intense vibration. If you get even further into it, it can change. If you really get further absorbed in the pain or that strong vibration, it can change the whole understanding of who you are in relationship to that pain. It's actually, you can forget yourself, you can lose yourself. All the self-consciousness that we have in relationship to pain can disappear when we're completely absorbed in the pain. And when the self-consciousness disappears, probably what you'll find is a lot of the optional extra suffering we add to the pain disappears also. So really be there with the pain, really explore it. So learning to be with pain helps us become familiar with ourselves, learn about how we tick and how we work, so that when we're challenged in other situations in our life, we'll have that familiarity, we'll understand ourselves better and know how to respond to the situation wiser. Working with pain can be a place of developing concentration and stillness. Working with pain can be a place of freeing ourselves from the ways in which we contract, the ways in which we cling. There can be a tremendous purifying force. We have to let go of so many things sometimes in order to find our peace with pain. Working with our own pain, opening up to it and being with it, can be a place of developing compassion. And that's probably one of the very important aspects of pain, is to develop compassion for oneself and also compassion for others. I've had a situation on retreat, for example, where I was a teacher and someone was struggling with something, sometimes physical pain, sometimes with other things. And they just mostly struggled through the retreat. And the retreat ended, and they were glad they did the retreat, but nothing seemed to have changed or move around the pain. And They didn't seem to develop any wisdom or any freedom around it or anything. It just was really uncomfortable, miserable for them. And then they go back home to their life, and they report, come back, and they, some weeks or months later, they come and tell me, oh, because of that intimacy I had for that week with my suffering and my pain, my physical pain, how difficult it was, and how I struggled with it, and how I saw how much I struggled with it, and I couldn't do anything about my struggle. Now that I encounter other people going through the same thing, I feel so much compassion for them. I really understand, I have so much empathy, I really understand, you know, how difficult it is for them. And I don't think I would have had so much empathy and compassion if I hadn't gone through it myself. And having compassion, the capacity for compassion and empathy, I think is one of the beautiful things that human beings can develop. It comes from opening to our life as it is. So there are benefits from focusing on pain. It can also help, so the help so that pain isn't so bad. Pain also can teach us a lot about how we need to act objectively in the world to respond to so that pain becomes better. I like to think of pain as a signal which is trying to teach us something. If you numb yourself out or take pain medication, which sometimes is necessary and useful to do, but you might not learn how to compensate or work with the pain to lessen it on your own. So I know one person who has arthritis, and she says that what she learned from paying attention to her pain, careful attention, was she learned how she needed to walk so that the pain wouldn't be there. So she wasn't putting that kind of pressure on her joints. If she had taken her pain medication her doctor wanted to take, she would have continued to walk. She thought she would have continued walking the way she normally would have walked, and that still would have put pressure in the kind of way that was damaging. But she was able to find a way not to put that pressure on by listening to the pain and working with it and around it. Sometimes it's not wise to open up to pain in meditation. Sometimes it's not a useful thing to do. And if the mind gets more and more contracted and tight, if we feel more and more discouraged in the process and worn down in the process, then it's counterindicated. You shouldn't hang out there with pain. You should find some other way of working with it. And one of the ways, there's many ways then. One is simply, if you can, break the meditation. There's other ways of working with pain rather than looking at it directly. One very pleasant way, or can be pleasant, is when the pain is very intense in some part of your body, is to look elsewhere in your body for some experience of pleasure, something that's pleasant and comfortable, and then see if you can develop concentration on that place. And then see if you can, as you get concentrated on the pleasure as an alternative to the pain, then let that pleasure grow and grow and grow. I've known people who have suffused their whole body with pleasure by taking us. And there was one woman who had tremendous pleasure. Her meditation teacher came to her, actually, he had telephone interviews with her in the hospital. And she was racked with pain, and nothing in the hospital they could do to help her. And he had her find some place of pleasure. And she described it to me as being a little square inch on her inner thigh. And so with a coaching of her meditation teacher, she stayed there on that little inch until she was really focused on it. And then she was instructed to let it expand that pleasure out into the rest of her body. And at some point, after some time of doing this, that filled her body with pleasure and delight that overrode the experience of pain that she was, you know, drowning under. So that's one little, you know, way of working with pain. I could go on and on talking about pain. I have so much experience about pain. But I don't know. If sometimes I wonder. Some people are leaving. And I guess it's kind of a sober kind of talk because you don't look very happy listening to this. So should I go on or should I stop? Yes. Is it painful to hear this? It's very painful, huh? Go ahead, Pesha, please.
I have a child of pain means something is wrong, uh-huh, or tight or not healthy. And it's an important signal.
Yeah, always.
So I never understand why people will sit, you know, on a cushion in a great deal of pain when they could sit in a chair or alleviate. Because if you're sitting in constant pain, let's say you're sitting in full lotus like you were for a week, isn't it possible that pain means you're damaging your knees?
It can be, definitely. And I've noticed, I don't know if this is a true statement about different meditation traditions, but I've noticed that a lot more Zen students damage their knees in meditation than Vipassana students. And the reason is that, I think the reason is that classically in Zen, you weren't actually taught to be mindful as carefully as you are in Vipassana. You were told just to focus on your breath and kind of tough it out. And so there wasn't that careful attentiveness that would see the difference between pain which is damaging and pain which is not. And my experience is that I almost always know the difference. And I've been racked in pain. I've broken out in sweat because I had so much pain. Mm-hmm. But I knew I wasn't damaging myself. At least I didn't think I was. I don't know about all the modern research about how these stress hormones get developed and inflammations develop and all these things. So, you know, I'm kind of actually, you know, I'm ignorant a lot about the medicine of it. But it seemed to me that I could see the difference between what was damaging and not damaging. And I would always try to err on the side of, if I was unsure, I would err on the side of being careful. So it's not always more damaging. But is it beneficial to hang in there with pain when it's there? And if it's not damaging, there are times when it's actually beneficial. Because if you want to develop freedom, you want to be freedom in all. Real freedom only counts if you learn how to be free in all circumstances. And in meditation, it's a very interesting place because in meditation, sometimes if you have meditation pain, like a knee or a back or something, you do have the option to break the meditation. So you have some choice there. And so you have to decide what's the wise thing to do. But there might come a time in your life when you don't have a choice. And are you prepared? And meditation is a place to prepare yourself. And you can always break it when you feel it's getting too much. You kind of push the edge and see, you know, how much more can I learn here? How much more can I develop myself? So that sometime in the future when it's not interesting, when I don't have any other choice. The other thing is that some pain comes from structural problems, illnesses or structural problems or injuries or something like that. But there's also a category of physical pain that has more of a psychological source, tension, holding patterns. And in those kinds of pain, it's actually often very valuable to bring our attention to them. Because it's the attention to them which will help them unravel. It's the attention to them will help bring us into the psychological realm, which is their source. If we simply, every time we have, you know, if we have 10 shoulders, and see, one of the paradoxes of meditation is that, you can start relaxing in meditation. Great, this is relaxing. I got it made. And then you relax the surface muscles. And then what's hidden behind the surface muscles is a much deeper chronic kind of tension, which has got, you know, the tension is chronic in the muscles tend to go numb, apparently. And so as the surface muscles kind of relax, as we awaken ourselves, our somatic self, that deeper tension shows itself. And it could be intensely burning. I've had, you know, boy, was it hot, painful. And it's not, it wasn't an injury, I wasn't sick, it was just that, you know, it was 20 years of fear. You know, it was there in that shoulder blade. And so part of the healing process of that kind of pain is to stay there and let it to open up and let it relax. There seems to be an addition that awareness itself seems to have seems sometimes to have a quality of bringing a loving presence, a relaxing presence to places of pain. So sometimes awareness itself can be very healing to a place of pain. I don't know exactly how this works. Just it's very reassuring to have this, you know, especially if the mindfulness is kind of loving or kind, gentle. But it, but sometimes what I imagine is that as we relax with a meditation, is that the we have a different set of hormones or molecules, endorphins or something going through our bodies. We learn to relax around pain. As we learn to bring attention to it, I mean, there's greater blood flow to the area, which sometimes can help relax it. Sometimes it maybe makes it worse. So there are some times where actually bringing attention helps heal the place of pain. So, so if you just run away from it, you don't get the healing benefits when that's the case. And so while you still have a choice, I'd encourage you to push the envelope with your pain and learn how to be at peace with that. Other questions?
I guess I have two questions. One is there some intermediary space where there's the no pain, and then there's the pain, and then there's sort of what you're describing, like, oh, it's like I've transcended or I've realized some aspect, you know? I guess I'm still at the point where it's like I experience pain and I still, it's just a nuisance, you know? And I just want to sort of get rid of it.
Well, that's an attitude we have towards it. And so, you know, maybe you can take it, see if you can change that attitude and see, is there some benefit to working with the pain? Is there some purpose? A classic Buddhist purpose is it's purifying. It helps us purify the inner life. And it's not just a nuisance. Some teachers will say that all physical pain in your body is needs to be worked through in order to purify the psyche. Vipassana is classically called the path of purification, purifying all these different aspects of ourselves.
I even heard that it said that any pain you experience is karma. Is
karma past. Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. The Buddhists will say that. Any pain, it's all karma. You know, and all pleasure and anything, they'll say everything's karma. I don't know how useful it is to say that. However, something that very. I mean, this is not a technical term, but there's pain that comes from injury or structural problems, illnesses. There's psychological pain in our body which in our pain which comes from psychological holding patterns, and then there's a third kind of pain which is not a technical term as far as I know, but it's sometimes called dharma pain. And that seems to be that's a label that some people put on physical pain in the body, which seems to be there for no discernible reason at all. There's no psychological reason for it being there. You know, you can't discern anything. You've been focusing on it for years, and there's no structural problem. It seems to be going on. It's just there. And so they call it dharma pain. It's just that's pain of life. You know, it's just there. And once when I was sitting with Joseph Goldstein on a 3-month retreat. In the middle of the retreat, I had this tremendous burning pain in my shoulder blade, my left shoulder blade, and it was really bad. And I'd go for interviews, and he'd give me really good advice. Try this. And I'd try it, and it just got worse. And he said, well, cultivate equanimity around it. So I tried to cultivate equanimity, and it just got worse. You know, it was this horrible pain. And finally, I went to an interview with Joseph, and he said, I told him one more time, you know, what I tried to do with it and how it didn't work, and it was so much pain. And this time he didn't give me any more advice. He just looked at me and said, oh, probably in a past life you stabbed someone in the shoulder. And, you know, I don't know about this Buddhist thing about rebirth and all that. I don't really, you know, that's not something I really know much about. But, so it's not that, the belief of that wasn't so important for me. But somehow when he said that, what it kind of said to me was, oh, it's there for a reason, and I don't have to know the reason. And it was when that cognitive change happened within me that's when I finally was able to accept it and found the equanimity that he kept asking me to find. So it was a cognitive change that allowed me to kind of just relax my hold on it. So there can be change. And that's part of the reason I wanted to give this talk today, is to say we can have a different attitude to our pain than we'd often have if we're untrained or other, you know, weren't told that we could have a different attitude. So you might experiment. Next time you have some pain, experiment with being with it.
More awareness.
Yeah, and find out for yourself if there are benefits from being with pain, hanging out there with paying attention to the whole gestalt of what happens when you're in pain.
A quick second question is, I had once been instructed that if the pain is becoming more powerful, more prominent than your intended object of meditation, then you should sort of do something and so you can go back. I mean, if you're saying, okay, for this hour, I'm going to focus on my breath, but the pain is getting so much that you can't focus on the breath, or at least you think it's getting so much, that just take the 2 minutes to relax it and then go back to your intended object. Same way if there's some sort of, you know, and maybe this is for weaker meditators. If there's a noise in the room that is so constant, and then you could go turn it off because it's distracting you from your intended object, that you just go turn it off and come back.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
I mean, that's certainly one strategy a person can do. And I think particularly if a person is trying to develop concentration on an intended object, mindfulness is the way we teach mindfulness meditation is that whatever is the predominant experience becomes the meditation. So we give some emphasis to an intended object like the breath. We give some emphasis and priority to it, but we don't hold on to it. And we're ready to let go of it if there's a sound or a pain, and we make that the meditation. So pain, in other words, in that sense, pain doesn't become a distraction from meditation. It becomes the meditation. Yes, last one.
I was just going to tell the story. I have this 10-year-old friend that has spinal cancer, and he's had, you know, I don't know how many trips to the hospital in like the last 3 years. He's never had any sort of, you know, formal meditation training or anything. I wanted to share the story because he says that he wants to die a slow and painful death. And, you know, I mean, here's a kid who's not been able to play like everybody else. He can't get up and jump around like people. He can't do most of the things that most of us could do. And he's had to sort of figure out on his own, like some way to sort of, you know, continue his life. And he says, you know, he's laughing when he says that, you know, he wants to have this kind of death. But I think what it does for him, in some sense, is to have the presence over that pain. He's had a tremendous amount of pain because it's, you know, driving his back and stuff. And he's just a 10-year-old kid, you know, to sort of have figured that strategy, you know, out on how he's going to manage this, because it just, I don't know, it was just really nice.
Yeah. It's also very humbling to be with pain. And I think most of us, I'll just speak for myself maybe, but most of us, being humble from time to time is very helpful. You know, and also to realize, to be up against something that's really painful. And some of the valuable experiences I've had with pain in meditation was when I was just so, nothing worked. Meditation didn't work. You know, nothing helped make it better. Just, you know, I was just so humbled by it. Just, this is really bad. You know, and to realize that I, you know, not bring a certain kind of conceit that, oh, I can find my way with it. I can practice with it. I can do something with it. But let go of that too. Well, so now you got a pep talk around pain. I hope that you find this encouraging, and I hope you have some appreciation that the capacity to open to pain and difficulty is the same capacity to open to joy and freedom. And if you avoid the pain and the difficulty, that probably you'll end up avoiding your full capacity to feel joy and freedom as well. So may all of you learn the art of opening to life as it is. Thank you.